This is Christopher O'Reilly, and welcome to this week's podcast of From the Top. Enjoy.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. Today, we're bringing you The Big Story, our highlight show featuring unusually compelling stories told by the superb young musicians we've met over the years. A French horn player who's overcome the tragedy of teenage gang violence to thrive in classical music, a 14-year-old pianist with an amazing tale of American generosity, and more. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. And sitting right here at the mic next to me in our Boston studio is our piano-perfect host, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. Very kind of you. The kids on today's show have brought us some of our most inspirational moments, and to kick off this parade of good memories, I want you to meet 14-year-old pianist Dasha Burkartseva. Her big story is that she ran into some perfect strangers who then totally changed her life. We'll hear that tale in a moment, but first, her music. Here she is playing the first of two pieces she brought to our program, Autumn Leaves, by the contemporary Ukrainian composer Oleg Polovoy. Pretty evocative for a 14-year-old. Dasha Burkartseva appeared on a show we taped at the Aspen Music Festival a couple of years ago. That Aspen experience was her first time in the United States, and the tale of what she overcame at home in the Ukraine and how she made it to the U.S. is definitely worth a listen. Now, Dasha, back in Ukraine, it's just you and your mom, right?
Yes.
Together? How is life with mom? Are you guys close?
Yes, we are very close. We are like best friends, like sisters. We speak a lot. I like to speak with her. She can answer on all questions.
It's wonderful. Yes, it's wonderful to have such a warm relationship with your mother, particularly in light of the fact that you and your mom have been through some very, very tough times.
Yes.
I mean, tell everybody where you were living for a while.
When I came to Odessa, I was 8 years old. My mom took me from village when I lived for 6 years. And we lived in a rental apartment, and we had to move, and we had no place to live, and we lived in a music school.
So you've got your piano, and what, you're sleeping under the piano?
Yes, it was very tiny room without anything, so we lived there probably almost half a year.
My goodness. So from that kind of difficulty in Odessa now to Aspen, to help tell the story of how this all happened and turned around in a wonderful, wonderful way, here's our 15-year-old roving reporter, Emily Mayer. Emily? Emily, you spoke to two people who've become very important in Dasha's young life.
That's right, Lynn and Dan Levinson. They're really nice people who live here. They met me outside the Aspen Landmark, the Paradise Bakery, and we sat on the Cooper Street Mall.
Well, we met Dasha on a as a result of a trip that we took in September, where we were on a boat with others circumnavigating the Black Sea. And one of the stops that we made was in the city of Odessa, which is the primary seaport for the country of Ukraine. And it was there that when we were traveling around the city and looking at all the sights, that the people on the tour told us about a concert that was going to take place in the afternoon. And after she played, the audience absolutely was stunned. And that's how we first met Dasha.
So after hearing this girl's amazing playing, how did this turn into bringing her here to the United States to play at Aspen?
Well, after the performance, Lynn and I went up to meet this gal. And also, by the way, we wanted to buy one of her DVDs to take home with us. And I just was basically talking to her, you know, the usual la-di-da-di-da, oh, by the way, you should come to the United States maybe someday, and this sort of thing. And it was, I mean, it was just general talk. And all of a sudden, this little kid looked me in the eye, slapped me on the front of the thigh, and said, "What do you think they'd like to hear? And also, when do you want to go?" And I think it was at that second that something changed.
Dasha did tell us that almost every time she played, a few tourists would say to her, "Would you like to come to the United States?" But nobody ever did anything.
There was something about her demeanor. There was something there that was very resolute. And I knew intuitively, and so did Lynn, that nobody was going to pick up this this journey and really make it happen, because the intricacies that are involved are just staggering.
Yeah. So what were some of the difficulties to bringing Dasha over to the United States?
Well, what I did is I went over. We achieved the we did get the visas. As a matter of fact, I told Dasha we went through a method that we would use, because I knew that the Russian-speaking Americans in the embassy would only be speaking Russian to Dasha. And I said to Dasha, "Whatever you do, just keep speaking English. I don't care what he says. Just keep speaking English," which she did. And eventually, I could hear two stamps go down, and they got the visas. I think one of the most memorable things was that Dasha came out with both hands in the air with her mom, with these pieces of paper, and she said, "Yes." And then immediately in the middle of the U.S. Embassy in Kiev broke out into singing the Star Spangled Banner at the top of her lungs. I have to tell you, that was a scene.
Thank you.
That was 14-year-old Dasha Burkartseva performing Toccata by Ukrainian composer Vitaly Filipenko. She's one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artists.
Podcasts of From the Top are available at fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org.
To learn our next performer's story, we turn to an interview conducted by our teenage roving reporter, Chailey Smith. She met with 16-year-old French horn player Eliodoro Viasio when we recorded our show at Pepperdine University. Eliodoro goes by the nickname Lolo.
Lolo, you had a love of music really early on in your life.
Yeah, it actually started when I was five, and me and my family had gone down to Mexico, and my dad had died when I was like one, and so when we got there, my aunt had all these tapes that used to belong to him, and they were all mariachi-style music, and the whole month I was there, I was basically just listening to the music and stuff. So when I got back up here to the U.S., all my uncles would pay me to sing the songs for them and stuff because I had them all memorized. Yo te di de lo bueno que traía
entre mis manos. And then the next thing that happened really big music-related in your life was that a teacher you had in fourth grade had a really big impact on you?
Her name's Jeannie Echenique, and she wasn't even a music teacher. She was just a teacher. And what she did, she started a music program because the district didn't have any programs at any schools there. And basically she just asked us what instrument we wanted to play. And at first I picked clarinet because my brother played it. But when I saw the French horn, it was really cool. I'd never seen anything like it because it's not a musical instrument that they use in Mexican music at all. So when I saw it, it was really unique and like beautiful to me, so I picked it.
And then at that point in your life, you had to go through something really difficult.
Yeah, when I graduated from elementary school and I went into seventh grade and eighth grade, my brother dropped out of the music program and stuff. He stopped playing clarinet and basically just started getting into gangs and stuff. And in eighth grade, one time after school, I went home and I got a phone call, and one of his friends asked for my older sister, and he sounded really like crazy and stuff. So I thought he was just playing, so I gave the phone to my sister, and my sister like dropped the phone and ran because apparently he had told her that my brother had gotten shot, and they were down like a few blocks from my house. So when my sister came back, she was crying and stuff. And I didn't know what was going on. And when they told me, like, my brother had passed away, I didn't really believe it because to me he was like my father, you know. I didn't think it was possible for him to get hurt or anything like that, so.
But throughout that really difficult period, you never stopped playing French horn?
No, actually I started getting more into the horn because it helped me get some of that like anger and grief out there, and I actually started playing a lot of horn and listening to a lot of horn music and stuff, and that's basically all I did for a long time.
And your music is really taking off now. This is your first year in one of the best two symphonies in the country.
Yeah, now I'm in the San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra, and I tried out for it last year, and I was really worried because the year before, me and Jeannie had actually gone to hear one of their concerts, and to me, they were the best orchestra I'd ever heard, and I was really worried that I wasn't going to make it and stuff. So when we were driving down to San Francisco, the whole time I was being quiet and stuff, and Jeannie was trying to talk to me and stuff, and I wouldn't say anything because I was really nervous. So when we got there, I went in there, and when I came out, I was the one talking because I was really excited. I knew I'd made it because it was a really good audition, and now I'm in the San Francisco Youth Orchestra.
This is a kind of a dumb question, but I was wondering, how would you say in your own words what music has meant to you throughout your life.
Music has helped me with everything in my life, with my brother's loss, and whenever I feel mad or something, I'll listen to some music, or whenever I feel anything that, you know, I listen to music to help me whenever I feel sad or anything. I think that music is not just music for me, it's like my life.
Now, everybody, please welcome Eliodoro Vallecillo. Lolo, great to have you with us. Congratulations are in order. You are a recipient of one of those Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Awards. That's fantastic news. And I understand you've put the financial award towards something really special.
Yeah, new horn.
Yeah. What's it like compared to the old horn you were playing before?
Well, it's easier to play, it sounds better, and it looks better.
Looks better. Yeah, playing the French horn is never an easy thing, but I mean, it was like obvious, the upgrade, like, you know, great move, fantastic. Can't wait to hear how it sounds. Tell everybody what we're going to play together.
I'll be playing Morceau de Concert by Saint-Saëns.
Thank you. That was 16-year-old French horn player Eleodoro Viasio from Salinas, California.
Eleodoro was also featured on our second season of television, and there's a wonderfully shot video of him performing and telling his story. Check it out at fromthetop.org.
Our next segment also features a Californian, but her experience is so extremely removed from that of Eleodoro's, you'd hardly believe she was from the same country, forget about the same state. Her name is Sage Poe. She's a 15-year-old harpist. Her musicianship, well, that's impressive, but her story is off the grid, literally. Sage, your musical and your life journey has already been exciting and unexpected, and it's been a journey that you've taken largely without shoes.
Yes, indeed.
Glad to see you're barefoot on stage. But even in the snow?
Yes, of course.
Okay, first of all, describe to everyone where you live.
Well, I live on 50 acres in the forest, and there are different structures. I live in a cabin, and my dad lives in a yurt. My mom lives in another cabin. Our kitchen is in a trailer. We have solar power and are completely off the grid.
Wow. My God, you're living in a hippie commune. And so you've always loved it? You know, life without Zac Efron is okay as a teenager?
It's fine.
Really fantastic. now it's just you and your parents living together. What happened? There were a bunch of people in the commune. I mean, how many kids were you growing up with?
There were a lot of different people coming through for my whole childhood, basically. And just a couple years ago, we had 15 people, six other kids, and for like 2 years, we all lived together. We shared dinners. We had weekly meetings, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Recently, there's only been three of us living here. I mean, me and my mom and my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically because after there were 15 people living there, two couples broke up, and they didn't really want to live together anymore. So they left, and now it's just the three of us.
And this is all evolving around you as you're growing up, and as you say, you've got a voice in how the place is run. And
yeah.
That's an amazing way of living. And it's not isolating? I mean, what do you do for school? Are you going to school?
Well, I'm homeschooled, but I'm homeschooled with a charter school. So I get to go two times a week to classes in drama and art and math and science and whatever I want to take, basically. See a bunch of other kids, be in Grass Valley. There's a Center for the Arts. There's Music in the Mountains, which is a nonprofit organization which does music education and has a symphony and a competition and stuff. So I don't feel isolated at all.
No, not at all. But I'm wondering, when you become an adult, are you going to act out and rebel and, become a soccer mom? Or, what's going to happen? Do you find yourself wanting to live in the big city, or do you like living in the country?
I'd like to try out the big city, but I think I'm always going to be a country girl. And I'd like to live in community again someday, too.
It's obviously working out beautifully, and you have such a sunny disposition, and I can only imagine, the harp resounding over these 50 acres and all the woodland creatures listening to you. It's really a great scene, Sage, and thank you for bringing it to us. Sage Poe, 15-year-old harpist from Camptonville, California, another Jack Kent Cook young artist, and we're going to hear her play the Courant Movement from Lynn Wainwright Palmer's classical Suite for Harp. Thank you.
Paige Poe, 15-year-old harpist from Hamptonville, California, playing Lynn Palmer's classical suite for harp.
If you're wondering what it would be like to see these amazing performers in action, hop over to our YouTube channel. There you'll find video clips from each and every show, behind-the-scenes features, even content created by the young musicians themselves. Go to youtube.com/fromthetop.
Support for From the Top comes from this and other radio stations, and from U.S. Trust, who believes that the arts play a vital role in stimulating the hearts and imaginations of our country's best young musicians, as well as NPR listeners. From New England Conservatory of Music, where young artists and teachers are committed to transforming classical music. Online at necmusic.edu. And from the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, whose mission is to advance the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. This is NPR.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week, it's our Big Story Highlight Show, featuring some of the most compelling stories kids have told us over the past couple of seasons. Up next, a classical guitarist who is also a national champion speed skater. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, where young artists and teachers are committed to transforming classical music. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Before we meet the brilliant athlete and guitarist Joanne just mentioned, we'll hear him play. This is 17-year-old Kimani Griffin from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, performing the second movement of the Aquarelle Suite by Sergio Assad.
Thank you.
17-year-old Kimani Griffin playing the music of Sergio Assad. Total passion and commitment in his sound, I think.
It's just mind-boggling to me that his focus is only partially on the guitar.
He's a national and internationally ranked speed skater. Our teenage roving reporter, Tasha Coleman-Jones, got together with him to talk about it and to watch a few videos of his races.
So what competition is this?
This particular race is the 1,000 meter from 2007 Indoor Nationals in Omaha, Nebraska.
Wow, that's intense. That's nationals, you said?
Yeah, it's my first nationals was in 2000. This was my sixth. I was out 1 year, so.
One lap. Wow, you won that one.
Yeah.
First place.
That was actually the first, well, second race that in my individual racing that I've won. I actually won and broke the record, so. Wow.
Guitar, which is so hard, and this, skating. What in the world drives you? How do you do it?
You have to want it if you want to be successful and good, so I guess I just want to be that much better than everybody else that does it, so I guess it's a drive within me.
Also I read that you've gotten into ice speed skating, which is a very popular choice in the Winter Olympics. Where are you with that?
I actually picked up short track ice skating when I was 14. I fell in love with it, and I went to Utah for a couple clinics last year and stayed out there for a month and trained with Derek Parra, cool, who was a gold and silver medalist in the 2002 Olympics in Utah. So, And then a couple days ago, me and my mom received an endowment from the U.S. Olympic Committee.
Wow. And aside from the sheer physical challenges of skating, you've had to overcome some serious emotional challenges.
Yeah, it was 2002 at the regional competition, which is a qualifier for nationals. And I had a relay with a really good friend of mine, Johnny Patterson. And we ended up qualifying for nationals, and it was real exciting because, you know, he had just began skating and he kind of looked up to me. And after that, his dad's a truck driver, so he had a drive to Pennsylvania, I think. And Johnny wanted to go with his dad, and his mom said no, and they argued. And his mom finally said yes, and they had an accident on the highway and flipped over a bridge. So,
gosh,
it was a real turning point in my life. I was only 11 when it happened, so whenever I skate, you know, I think of him and would wonder where he would be in his skating career. And he's definitely one of the things that keeps me driven in the sport.
In your application to From the Top, you wrote that you are not really an emotional guy. And I saw some footage of you playing, and it was incredibly emotional. I mean, and you also play the guitar, the classical guitar, which is an emotionally sensitive instrument, and you play it well. And I saw so much emotion in your face. How can you say you're not an emotional guy?
There's, for me, emotion outside of music is typically what I kind of keep to myself. But I guess emotion, especially slower romantic pieces, my emotions tend to come out in my playing. So I guess for me, that's how I get my feelings out.
17-year-old Kimani Griffin performing the third movement of the Aquarelle Suite by Sergiu Assad. Like Eliodoro, who we heard earlier in the program, Kimani was also featured on our second season of television. Check out the TV section of FromTheTop.org to see some fun video of him skating and performing on the stage of Carnegie Hall.
Kimani is just another example of the kind of young arts leader we're all about here at From the Top. In fact, From the Top has its own arts leadership program, which includes training, service projects, and music advocacy, all done by and for young musicians. Learn more about it at FromTheTop.org.
Trio Vita, a teenage piano trio from the Chicago area, is our next highlight on today's show. Their story, while I'd say it's big, cannot be considered highly serious.
Oh, come on, Chris. They've overcome something. They've overcome adversity.
Sure, the adversity of mutual annoyance. We'll hear their funny story about the pains of collaboration in a moment. But first, their excellent music making. This is Ryan Murphy, 15-year-old violinist, Stanley Moore, our 16-year-old cellist, and Brian King, 17-year-old pianist. And they're performing the virtuosic finale of Smetana's Trio for Violin, Cello, and Piano in G minor. Thank you.
Vita from the Chicago area, Ryan Murphy, 15-year-old violinist, Stan Lemoore, 16, cellist, and Brian Chang, 17-year-old pianist, playing Smetana. You know, we've had a lot of teenage chamber music ensembles on this show, and they've normally been playing together for a year or two, and they've become all close and friendly and fuzzy, and that's what we tend to talk about. But you guys offer a refreshing change of pace. Well, you kind of annoy each other, don't you? So, in fact, we're going to give this part of our show a name. That's what's annoying about you. Okay, so Ryan, what's annoying about Stanley?
Stan is very vocal in what he wants, and that's fine, but the way he describes his ideas is through metaphors, mm-hmm. and it's just hard to understand sometimes. Like, tell them your rocket ship one.
Well, I like to describe our tempo
of this piece.
Yes, of this piece.
Yeah.
Well, it's that rocket ship is a spaceship, and and what I like to think of is it hurtling through space, and you just can it slows down ever so slightly by meteorites and such like that. And it just gives you this driving force keeping the piece going.
Right. What's annoying about Ryan? Stanley, it's payback time. Go ahead.
Well, I'll be in the middle of this very interesting piece of imagery and he'll interrupt me on my grammar.
Yes, I do.
So it's not just the far-fetched quality of your metaphors, it is the actual grammatical use of your metaphors that he objects to. He's a real stickler. What sorts of things would Stanley say, Ryan, that would bug you?
Well, he might say, well, there's peanuts in the jar. And I would say, yes, there are.
You wouldn't do well as a host of this program. I'm constantly, you know, looking at this script and it's a mess with grammatical errors and things like that.
I feel so for you.
You can only imagine. I only make it worse, by the way. Ryan, I've got a sentence designed to annoy you. There's a grammatical error in it. Let's see if you can identify it. All right? Fair enough?
Okay.
It'd be very special. Here it is. Stanley says he doesn't have to practice much, but on the day of a performance, it's important that he tries to practice a little. I'll repeat it, because, of course, when I say it, it sounds absolutely confident, and there's nothing wrong with it at all. But here it is. Stanley says he doesn't have to practice much, but on the day of a performance, it's important that he tries to practice a little.
Stanley doesn't practice.
Damn.
That wasn't the answer we were going for, but it is annoying.
Yeah.
And so that works. Actually, it should be try, not tries. It's important that Stanley try, not that Stanley...
I knew that.
You knew that. Oh, okay. Yeah. And, meanwhile, Brian, there you are. What's annoying about Brian here? I mean, is there anything that annoys you guys about Brian?
He doesn't say anything. He's...
Stan and I will be arguing, and Stan will say something, and I'll say the opposite, and then Brian will agree with both of us.
Brian, you're supposed to be the tiebreaker in this. Do you just not care?
Pretty much.
Well, that's just dandy, all of you. Thanks for sharing your true feelings, and that's what's annoying about you. Can never have enough of that on NPR, I think.
Okay, we have to provide the disclaimer here that those three actually do like each other.
They do?
Yes.
Of course they do. And there's nothing annoying about their music. Our final performer appeared on a program we taped at our home base in Boston 7 years ago. He's cellist David Ricciero from Natick, Massachusetts, and he was 17 years old at that time. Here he is describing his piece Requiebros by Gaspar Cassado.
So what is a Requiebros? What is the basis of the piece?
I think it's basically a love song, mm-hmm. kind of a seductive, flirtatious.
Sort of a Don Juan serenade yeah. sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it's a little masculine. Yeah,
yeah? Very much. And you really get around the cello. You've got some pretty remarkable fingers there.
Yeah.
Long and tapered and...
Yeah, they're a little bizarre. A little conversation piece. But people actually say they look a lot like E.T.'s fingers.
E.T. Play cello.
Of course, the shape of David's fingers is not his big story, and it's not the reason we're going to close today's highlight show with his performance. David's big story actually occurred after he performed on our show. He went on to win one of the highest honors a musician can achieve. At the age of 24, he got first place in the Naumburg International Cello Competition. But flashback 7 years now, and you can hear this great cellist in development. I'm Christopher O'Reilly.
And I'm Joanne Robinson.
Please join us again next week. And now, taking it from the top, is David Ricciero performing Requiebros by Gaspar Cassado.
Thank you.
Today's highlight show was written and produced by Tim Banker for From the Top, with Tom Bagley for Tom Bagley Productions. Musical direction by Tom Vinieri with Caroline Cardius Menos. Our tour producer is David Balsam. Our production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is produced in association with WGBH Boston, our home and educational partners, New England Conservatory in Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. From the Lemelson Foundation, committed to improving lives through invention in the U.S. and developing countries. On the web at lemelson.org. From the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And from Joyce V. Hale, in the interest of engaging an informed and civil electorate. This is NPR.
This is Christopher O'Reilly, and I hope you had fun listening to this week's podcast. As you might imagine, making From the Top happen week after week costs quite a bit of dough. If you believe in what we do, we really need you to help us out. Make a contribution of any size at fromthetop.org.